I'm Alex Breitenbach.
I'm Sean Cabrera.
And this is the Big Red Hockey Cast, the official podcast of Cornell Big Red Hockey, produced by the Big Red Sports Network. As always, thanks for listening. And check out the Big Red Sports Network at Cornell BRSN. That's at Cornell BRSN on Instagram to never miss out on any Big Red action. Well, this weekend, in spite of this being a special episode because our season is over, this weekend was still an interesting weekend of hockey, and I feel it's necessary to recap it just slightly, just to do it a little bit of justice. Mm-hmm. Anyways, for those of you who did watch, it is the number four seed Harvard, the Harvard Crimson, our bitter rivals that we throw the fish at, who upset Clarkson in the semifinal to move on to face the Quinnipiac Bobcats in the championship, and ended up upsetting the Quinnipiac Bobcats really, really late into overtime. So congratulations to Matthew Coronado for scoring that game-winning goal, and also to Mitch Gibson for getting the W. Gibby, we'll see you next year, and we'll have the fish prepared. Can't wait for it. It's going to be great. Anyway, so and with that win, they do punch their ticket into the NCAA Frozen Four tournament. They're going to face, I believe it's Minnesota State mm-hmm. on the 24th. And so that I'm not even going to go into that. That's a pretty tough matchup right there. Although we do have, and then on the other end, by default, Quinnipiac makes it into the tournament because they were the ECAC regular season champions, and they will face St. Cloud. However, I do have a quick Big Red alumni update. Matthew Galata. Matty G, our boy, who is playing for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, will face off against – hold on, let me look at it here. Will face off against Zach Driscoll and North Dakota, who we ended up sweeping this season. So best of luck to Matty G and the Fighting Irish in their endeavors. Also, Cam Donaldson, who plays for University of Massachusetts, will – be facing off against the Minnesota Gophers. So best of luck to our Big Red alumni who are in the Frozen Four tournament right now, battling for the chip. Additionally, we also like to update you, Kyle Betts, recently graduated Kyle Betts, and our Captain Correct. Kyle Betts recently signed with the Colorado Eagles. He is in Colorado right now. And all the best of luck to him with the start of his professional career. Additionally, we do have to do justice to a couple things that have happened recently. Number one being the number one truck, or rated number one truck by J.D. Power and Associates, Jeff Bellott, made his NHL debut recently for the Winnipeg Jets. And additionally, Morgan Barron at the trade deadline traded by the New York Rangers to the Winnipeg Jets, so he will get a chance to skate with Jeff Bellott in some regard, hopefully, and we wish them the best. Furthermore, Justin Barron, Morgan Barron's little brother, has just been traded to Montreal Canadiens, so it'll be very interesting to see the two brothers face off in potential matchups as the season progresses. But with that, I feel it's necessary to introduce our alumni guest for this week. It was a true honor to speak to this guy, and we haven't heard from him in a while, but what an amazing opportunity. We have none other than the defenseman from Chicago, Illinois, number six. And you know, you already know who I'm talking about. It's Alex Green. All right, so welcome back to this edition of the Sin Bin here on the Big Red Hockey Cast, and we are truly honored to have a very, very special guest with us, one of our prominent Big Red alumni. This week we have Alex Green. Alex, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. It's an honor. And I guess I'll just jump right in then. So, you know, how have things been in Syracuse? Have you been back to Ithaca recently or no?
I actually have been down to Ithaca a couple times. I think it was in November when Cornell played Yale at home, if I'm not mistaken. And it was rare for us to have a Saturday off with no game. So I actually made it down to the Yale game at home. Watched the Big Red beat Yale at Lina. So that was a lot of fun. And then
it was a great game.
Yeah, it was a great game. Liam Motley had a really nice goal.
Yeah.
And then my sister is also a senior at Cornell right now. So I've been down to see her a couple times as well. So it's been nice to be so close to Ithaca. And
Syracuse. I was going to say it's only, about an hour away. So, you know, you still get to come see the boys and stuff. That's pretty cool. And
yeah.
I guess now that you've been playing professionally for, you know, I guess a number of years now, what's the biggest difference between playing in college and playing professionally that you found?
Honestly, it's the mental grind of playing a 70 plus game season, I think. Obviously last year we played a shortened schedule because of COVID and the American Hockey League, but this year has been really eye-opening with regards to the amount of games we play on a weekly basis. So that's been a bit of an adjustment. So I'd say that's the biggest thing between college and pro that I've noticed.
Yeah, I was going to say, because we talked to a few other alumni who play professionally, and among them, that they all seem to have a consensus that the biggest thing is like, oh, you're playing so many more games, but in college, when you play a game, you feel like every game matters. You're trying to win every game, and, you know, because, you know, it feels like it's the end of the season for after every game, you know, you want to always give your best in a limited amount of time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 29 regular season games in the Ivy League. So every game matters. Every point is huge in the standings. Whereas in pro, you know, I think we play 76 games this year. So you're not going to be on your A game every single night. So, it's a huge adjustment for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet. And so I guess the Big Red have certainly been facing adversity and heartbreak after their season ended recently. But during your time in the Big Red, what did you do during the off season to, you know, keep your skills up and look ahead to next season? You know, how do you, like, what's your off season mindset, I guess?
Honestly, it's, you know, a pretty cliche answer. I'm sure you guys have heard this from some other guys that have been on the podcast, but pretty much just spending time with family, working out, training, getting ready for the upcoming season. So just the main focus each off season is trying to get bigger, faster, stronger, and nothing too crazy.
No, that's a great answer. And I mean, I know from a few of them, I know Betts talked about him spending the summer in Ithaca. Were you one of the guys who also spent the summer in Ithaca or no?
I was not a summer guy, unfortunately. I went home to Chicago each summer to spend time with family. So I was not a Ithaca summer guy, unfortunately.
No. That's cool. That's really cool. And, you know, it's good to see the family every now and then, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, so you racked up 30 points, including 10 goals over your 3 years with the Big Red. And you were always a formidable presence on the ice. I know we all missed you when you were out with an injury. But, you know, what do you attribute most to your success with the Big Red, you know, throughout your time here, you think?
Honestly, I think we just had so many great players on the three teams, or the 3 years rather, I should say, that I was at Cornell. I mean, if you look at the roster each year, there's so many guys that have moved on and played pro and stepped into the NHL. And just, I think being surrounded by so many great players helped not only the team's success, but personal success as well.
Now let's rewind quite a bit. Let's go back to the beginning. In fact, you know, growing up in Chicago, what made you originally want to play hockey? Was it that successful 2009, 2010 season from the Chicago Blackhawks?
No, so I'd actually, this is actually a funny story. The my neighbor in Chicago was actually Bob Probert. The enforcer on the Blackhawks, who unfortunately passed away. He was my next door neighbor in downtown Chicago. And you know, he would always be playing street hockey with his kids in front of our house. So, you know, obviously Bob Probert's outside playing street hockey with his kids, like you're going to go out and see what's going on. So honestly, I attribute, you know, my love for the game and my passion for the game and the reason I picked up a hockey stick in part to Bob Probert. So, yeah, pretty crazy story that he was my neighbor and how I got into hockey.
Yeah, I was about to say, what are the odds that Bob Probert is your neighbor? I was like, that was the last thing I was expecting to hear, but wow.
Yeah, no, it was pretty crazy. I mean, he's such a legend in the hockey community, and you know, it was sad that he passed away a few years ago, but yeah, Bob Probert, that's kind of how I got started into playing hockey.
Again, I definitely would never have guessed that. I my guess was really the 2009 season from the Chicago Blackhawks. That was my bet. That was my betting horse.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, did you always want to play defense? You know, given the
I always played defense growing up on the teams that I was on. I don't think I necessarily had a preference for, you know, forward or defense. I just kind of got placed there when I was younger and just kind of stuck with it. So, yeah.
And as a follow-up, we had a chance to actually ask Dervin this as well.
Yes, Seb.
So it's only fair now that we ask you this as well. As a defenseman, do you think that on a personal level, the points at the end of a game or a season, do they matter?
I mean, they're definitely nice to, you know, to have a couple goals and assists, but honestly, as a defenseman, the biggest thing you're worried about really is the team success, and plus minus is a huge, huge part of playing defense, and something that, you know, Ben Sire and the rest of the D Corps, as we called it at school, take pride in. So stats aren't necessarily the most important thing, but they definitely help a little bit.
All right. I feel that. I understand that. I think Seb actually gave a somewhat similar response. He was just like, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to do your duty. The points are nice. It's like a nice little decor wasn't the word he used, but it was almost implied as such that it just looked nice. But at the end of the day, you just got to do your duty.
Yeah. For Cody had a nice take on it too, as well. It was it's always good to hear from the defense corps. I always like that outlook because it's always like, oh, you know, it's about more about ways where you can contribute. And, you know, if you're contributing at the end of the day and you leave your mark on the team, that's what matters.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I mean, it's a lot of the unsung hero stats that don't show up on the score sheet, like blocking shots and
exactly.
Other things of that nature. So, yeah,
absolutely right. That's real, pretty much right on the ball. And you also put in time with multiple teams over your career in junior hockey, you know, most notably with the Muskegon Lumberjacks and the Lincoln Stars. Now, looking back on your career in juniors, what do you have to say was your favorite part?
Honestly, juniors was a little bit of a whirlwind for me, a little bit of a not stressful time, but, you know, it was kind of up and down. I got traded from Muskegon to Lincoln, and that was like, you know, something I'd never dealt with before. So that was a big adjustment. But honestly, I loved my time in Lincoln. It was a lot of fun to go see Nebraska Cornhusker football games, and we had a really good team the 2 years I was there. So it was a lot of fun in Lincoln, and I'm really glad I got to live in that part of the United States for 2 years and, you know, meet some really amazing, interesting people that, you know, I never would have met before if I hadn't played hockey out there.
Well, now I wanted to ask a follow-up question about that, because I know at the professional level, like, people get traded, but you can get traded in juniors too.
Yeah. It's not very common, but it does happen every once in a while. So, yeah, it was a bit of a stressful, crazy experience at the time when it happened, but it was for the better. So, it all worked out.
No, that's good to hear.
To my immediate memory, I don't think we have any other Cornell or Cornell alum or Cornell hockey players currently that were traded in junior. So I think that's the first we have, right, Alex?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, that's actually pretty cool. I'd like to understand a little bit more about, as I've done this podcast, I learned so much more about how junior hockey works, and that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I was a senior in high school, so I had to switch high schools and everything.
Oh, geez. You know,
transferring all the credits so I would be able to graduate. And obviously make it to Cornell, because you can't come to Cornell if you don't graduate high school. So
yeah,
yeah, it was stressful, like I said, for, you know, a couple of days, maybe a week, but everything kind of sorted itself out and worked out nicely.
Sticking, by the way, with your years in Lincoln, what was it like playing in front of the fans at that
stage? Oh, it was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. Lincoln, I think, has the best fans in the USHL. It's a really old rink, kind of like Lina, has a lot of character.
Yeah.
And honestly, you'd never expect it, but Lincoln is a pretty passionate hockey city. So yeah, we always had great, great fans, and the rivalry with the Omaha Lancers was unbelievable. Sold out every game we would play against those guys. So it was a lot of fun.
Did you ever get to play against Travis Mitchell when he was with the Lancers, or no?
No, I think I was already at Cornell when he was playing, playing in Omaha, but I played against Cody a couple times when he was in Fargo. So, we had some good battles for sure.
Nice.
Now, you also brought back earlier, and I'm just going to quote you quickly. You said you can't go to Cornell without graduating high school. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. That, you know, that's basic math, one could say. So yep. What made you decide Cornell was the place for you? And were there any other schools in the hunt?
Yeah, so I actually got recruited by Coach Sire when I was a junior in high school, when I was playing AAA hockey. And at the time I was pretty undersized, you know, not really grown into my body yet. So I was kind of a late bloomer. But you know, Ben Sire and Coach Schaefer liked what they saw when they came to watch me play. And at the time they were the best school that had, arguably the best school that had talked to me at that point. And, I decided to commit to Cornell, but, there were a few other schools that I was considering, but it was too hard to pass up the combination of Ivy League, academics and athletics. So that was the main deciding factor.
That's fair. Do you mind if I ask what were some of the names of the schools, or at least just one prominent one that was like, you know, it's between Cornell and this, but I'm going to go for Cornell.
Yeah, it came down to Michigan State and Cornell, actually. So wow. those were the two schools that I was really deciding between. But I wouldn't trade it for the world, my experience at Cornell. I loved every second of it, and I'm glad I made my way to Ithaca.
Amen. Amen to that.
I know we all certainly are. That's for sure.
Exactly. Now, back as a sophomore, you spent quite a bit of the season healing from an injury. And yet, once you were back on the ice, it was almost as if you had never even left. So is this a testament to the fact that anyone can come back from an injury if they put their mind to it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that. Honestly, the sophomore year was crazy. We had so many injuries. I was out for a while. Cody had a crazy injury with his wrist. I think Max hurt his shoulder. Like, it was insane. Like, I think we had like the most games lost to injury in the entire NCAA or something crazy. But I mean, if you look at all the guys that had gotten hurt that year, they all bounced back and have been huge contributors to the program. So yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yeah. All right.
Hard work and dedication in that regard, I guess. And I mean, also during your time with the Big Red, especially during your junior year, you ranked second on the team in block shots. And now, like, as a former hockey player myself, but never one to really put my body in front of a slap shot, blocking shots takes a lot of courage and pain tolerance. And I guess as normal guys, I have to ask, you know, what drove you to get in front of the puck so much and block every shot you could? And I also, to follow it up, did it take some getting used to?
Well, honestly, it doesn't feel good for a little bit. But you know, we have all the equipment on, so it's not too painful, but honestly, it's kind of just built into the culture of Cornell hockey, blocking shots. I mean, doesn't matter if you're, you know, first line center or the sixth, seventh defenseman on the team, everyone is expected to block shots. And, you know, I think that's why Cornell is known for being so stingy on defense and always having, you know, low goals against averages, and you know, it's part of the winning tradition at Cornell hockey. So yeah. it's kind of expected. And when you get recruited to the program, they make it very clear that everyone is expected to block shots and contribute on that side of defense.
Yeah, I'll bet. And I think that's a testament to why we have one of the best penalty kills in the nation, because everybody is like just constantly getting in front of the puck.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And yeah. Yeah. And I feel like most guys wear the almost tape on the side of the skate to make blocking shots easier on their feet. But, you know, some have protectors over the skates. Now, which one did you use to make the blow easier on yourself? Did you ever use any of that?
Yeah. So I wore the like clear plastic shot blockers that, you know, they kind of strap on over on top of your skate. I actually still wear them now. I'm pro, because, you know, guys shoot the puck insanely hard in the American Hockey League. So I definitely don't want to, you know, take the blow on some of those shots. But I wore those, the plastic shot blockers that you see some of the guys at Cornell wear.
I figure, oh, and I guess I'll follow that up with, you know, now playing pro, do you miss having the cage when you're like throwing your body in front of a puck, man?
Yeah. I mean, at times you definitely miss having a cage on, especially when you're, you know, playing on the penalty kill or watching a slap shot go whizzing by your face. But it's part of the game. You know, it's honestly kind of fun to wear a visor. It's kind of exhilarating, but there's definitely pros and cons to it for sure.
Yeah, of course. And I guess to follow that up, you know, you're one of only a few Cornell players who can claim this title. You were drafted after your freshman season, and you were the first Big Red player to do so since 2012. And so walk us through your initial feelings after you were being drafted. Like, you know, when did you find out?
Oh man. So I was actually at home in Chicago. I didn't make it to the draft in Dallas, because it was my third year eligible to be drafted. So I got passed over my first and second year eligible. So I was like, there's no point in, you know, flying all the way to Texas to go to the draft. And, you know, God forbid my name wasn't called. That would be pretty heartbreaking. So I was just at home kind of following it casually on TV and on my phone, not really like paying too much attention to it. But I kind of had an idea at the end of the season because of, you know, I had some interest from some teams, had some interviews with a couple teams. So I knew there was a good chance I'd get drafted. I just didn't know where. But my agent actually went to the draft in Dallas with another one of his players. So he was kind of texting me, giving me updates. And sure enough, Tampa drafted me in the fourth round. So it was a really exciting day for me and my family. And it was kind of a whirlwind, and it was a surreal moment.
Yeah. And what an amazing opportunity to be a part of, you know, the Bolts organization. That's such a powerhouse right now, even the Crunch, the Solar Bears, anything like that.
Yeah, no, it's pretty special for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in some ways, you know, you being a defenseman, in some ways being a defenseman is all about the chemistry that you have with your line mates. And I guess with that being said, was it initially difficult, you know, adapting to your new environment in professional hockey? Like when you initially got to, you know, the Crunch after, or the Solar Bears after leaving the Big Red, you know, was it hard at first?
Yeah, it was definitely an adjustment. I mean, I played pretty much all 3 years with Yanni Caldas at Cornell, so we had some great chemistry. So it was hard to kind of leave him and move on to the pro ranks and play with someone you'd never played before. But you kind of just, you know, feel it out with whoever you're playing with. And you know, everyone's so good at this level that it's not too hard to just jump into a game and you know, find some chemistry with someone new. So
have you had the chance to play against Caldas now that he's with the Condors?
No, unfortunately not. My team in Syracuse, we don't travel out west to play any of the AHL teams in the Western Conference, so haven't gotten to see Yanni yet.
Yeah. Hopefully there'll be a chance. And
yeah, I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, while you never got the chance to
be honored at an official Big Red Senior Night. You'll always have, you know, the last home game against Clarkson, that 5-1 victory in the 2019-2020 season. And that was a date that would mark your last official appearance in a Big Red uniform, as well as, I think, the last normal hockey game at Lina for quite some time. And so I guess walk us through your feelings when you, like, you know, you played that game and then you heard the season was canceled. You know, in that moment, is that when you realized, oh, like, now it's time to take that next step? Or did you think about it for a little bit?
No, it was a roller coaster of emotions, honestly. We had such a good team that year, 19-20. You know, the excitement around the locker room and around the rink was insane. I mean, I think everyone was healthy going into the playoffs too. So when we heard that, you know, COVID was shutting everything down, we were all heartbroken for sure. But, you know, I think like everyone else at first, we thought it would, you know, maybe 2 weeks, a month, and then everything would go back to normal. But here we are two years later, still kind of dealing with it. But no, my initial thought process was to go back for my senior year. I knew I had some areas of my game that I wanted to work on as a senior. And obviously we would have had a really good team with so many guys coming back under normal circumstances. But then once it became more clear that the Ivy League wasn't going to play and, you know, it wasn't going to be a normal year by any means, I kind of had to look at other options, and I was able to, you know, accelerate my credits to graduate. So it was, the best decision was just to sign pro and graduate early. So that was, the COVID kind of made the decision for me, honestly, but, yeah, I was all set on going back for my senior year for sure.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I guess I'll follow it up with, you know, we ask everybody this question on the podcast and it's always been a tradition here, but I guess now it's only fair we ask you. And so I guess, and this is going to be a tough question, but who was your mentor that you think, you know, throughout all your years at Big Red Hockey, who stands out as your most prominent mentor figure?
Honestly, I'd have to say Alec McRae and Yanni Caldas. They both took me under their wing from the minute I stepped on campus, even before that. Yanni was texting me all summer going into my freshman year. So, you know, he was unbelievable to me as a friend and a teammate. And, you know, he's someone I looked up to for sure when I was in Ithaca. And we still text all the time to this day and check in on each other and see how we're doing. So, yeah, I'd have to say McRae and Caldas for sure.
Yeah, no, haven't got the chance to have Caldas on yet, but that's definitely on the bucket list. We got McRae recently. That was a very interesting conversation.
I listened to the one with McRae. It was great. He's a character.
No, quite the character. And I guess let me follow that question up with, how did the Big Red prepare you for the pros, like the most, you think?
Oh, man. That's a tough question. Honestly, I think physically Cornell prepared me the most for the professional ranks. Just, you know, Coach Howley is unbelievable at what he does. I think I gained 10, 12 pounds my freshman year, and that just helped me significantly my junior or my sophomore and junior year, and even to pro. So I think just the amount of time we spend in the gym working on our bodies, getting stronger, is huge. And Coach Holly's unbelievable at what he does in preparing guys physically for professional hockey.
Now you mentioned, by the way, McRae and Caldas. So now that you play professional hockey, do you still keep in touch with some of your other old teammates?
Yeah, all the time. Go ahead.
No, please. You're the guest, please.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, we have a group chat with the guys from the 2021 class. So we're always sending tweets to each other about, you know, how guys are doing. And, you know, obviously the trade deadline was today. So a couple Cornell guys got moved, unfortunately. But, we stay in touch all the time. So, super close-knit group. And honestly, everyone I've played with at Cornell is – considered one of my best friends, and you know, we're all super close and stay in touch.
Now with the mentioning of McRae, I'm sure you must remember the emotions where Cornell scored against Harvard in the dying seconds, 2.3 seconds left, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, that was a crazy game.
Can you run me through those emotions, what was running through your mind as that scene was taking place right in front of you?
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of a blur, but just when Morgan got the puck below the goal line, he kind of made that cutback move and tried to wrap it around the other side, and then ultimately mm-hmm. found McCray kind of in that soft area in the slot. It was just like jaw dropping, honestly. Like it's insane. Like Lina was so loud, and just, you know, the rivalry with Harvard is so like historic and special. It was unbelievable. It was so crazy and special to be a part of.
So it sounds like you remember very much the elation. Like you said, yeah. The moment was a blur, but you remember the elation of it. So maybe it's just so much happiness. The adrenaline rush was just going straight to the brain.
Yeah, I just remember when McCray scored, I think I jumped 6 feet in the air on the bench, and like there was like no regard for like your equipment or your skates or anything. It was just like, yeah, straight joy and happiness on the bench. And yeah, it was a crazy game.
Now moving, you actually kind of beat me to the punch to this, by the way, because you mentioned the trade deadlines. You also said unfortunately, which is a point I may want to get back to soon enough. But obviously, just what, about 4 hours ago, I believe, Morgan Barron was traded from the New York Rangers to now the Winnipeg Jets. And now he'll be playing alongside Jeff Molot, from what it seems.
Yeah.
So like, does it give you some sort of pride to see your old teammates now just playing together?
No, it's insane. I mean, I'm super happy for them. And, you know, maybe unfortunately wasn't the right word choice, but obviously the team, you know, there's some connection to the team that drafts you originally. Like you want to make it work with the team that drafts you. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for Morgan to go to a new team, but, and even to play with Jeff for that matter, who just played in his first NHL game. It's super exciting to see those two guys reunited with one another, but yeah, it's exciting.
Speaking of Jeff, did you actually ever get to play against him in the AHL?
No, never played against Jeff in the AHL. He's also in the Western Conference, so we don't see the Manitoba Moose out here in Syracuse.
And so, so no actual intersection between the two, but what about Anthony Angelo or actually Morgan Barron for that matter? Have you ever played against those two?
Yep, I've played against Angelo. We played against him last week, actually. Played against Tristan Mullen.
Oh, yeah, Mully. I was going to ask that because I was like, has anybody heard from Mully recently? I
mean, yeah, yeah.
Man, played, with the played against Monsters and stuff.
Yeah, played against Mully a couple times in Cleveland. And then there's a couple older alums in Bridgeport, Jeff Kubiak and Cole Bardrow. So,
I've seen
a fair share of those guys, but no Caldas or Malott in Syracuse to play against them.
Right. Just curious about that. Actually, now that I think about it, since they are your old teammates, of course, how is the chirping on the ice? Do they chirp at you when you play against them?
No, we're actually pretty cordial. We usually just give each other a smile and
look at that.
A wink or something like that, but nothing crazy.
Well, not even friendly banter?
Maybe a little bit, but nothing too personal or anything like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are the odds the next time you play Mully, you drop the gloves with him and then just hug it out? That's the
no chance. Yeah, I don't want to sit in the box for 5 minutes.
Yeah, No, that's fair. That's right. You sit in the box for 5 minutes over that. No, I get it.
Not worth it. Fair. He's actually their team's actually coming to Syracuse on Wednesday, so we'll be square off against the Monsters in Syracuse on Wednesday night.
Oh, that'll be nice. Well,
I guess I suppose in that case, best of luck against
your
former teammate, now opponent, I guess we could say that now.
Yeah.
But best of luck, of course. And I suppose this is the penultimate question of the slap shot. Sinbin. Wow. It's a rough Monday. I mean, the sin bin. This is the penultimate question of the sin bin. But do you have any team traditions that you think you will miss?
From Cornell?
Yes.
Oh, man. Honestly, I think that the pregame meals were one of my favorite traditions when I was at Cornell. Everyone kind of was, it's, I wouldn't say it's a superstition, but everyone kind of sat at the same table every pregame meal with the same group of guys. And my table was led by Jeff Mellott, and our table was known as the Riddle table.
Interesting.
So any new freshman that joined the table had to answer Jeff Mellott's riddle to be welcomed or christened into the table for pregame meal. So was that was a fun tradition riddle, that, or I, was it like that I missed.
I'm sure he didn't throw you an easy one.
I mean, if you don't listen to it carefully, it can throw you for a loop. But it's not too hard. But yeah, it always gets a good laugh for sure.
I'm assuming Austin and McGrath were also there with you, right?
Yeah, Austin McGrath was at that table. My junior year, it was me, Jeff Mellott, Austin McGrath, Jack Malone, and Travis Mitchell. So it was a little bit of a motley crew, but we had some good laughs for sure.
Wow, that's a powerhouse of a table right there. Just saying, that's a powerhouse. And also, I mean, this is a little bit of a running gag we have going on, but were you ever a victim of a cookie shortage?
No, so I was actually never a cookie guy. I never had a cookie for pregame meal.
Wow.
It was kind of like one of my superstitions. I didn't believe in having the pregame cookie. So, no, I was never a victim of Matt Steinberg's shenanigans.
Go ahead, Alex.
So it's also a reminder to myself to buy him insomnia cookies. The man said he never had insomnia cookies before, so I got to get him some.
Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely he needs to try that before he graduates.
Yeah, exactly. I don't
know. What are the odds of that? The man, we baptized him with the name the Cookie Monster, yet he's never had a cookie from insomnia. It doesn't really make much sense when you think about it.
No, not at all.
No, definitely not.
And now the last question of the Sin Bin. Do you have any other reflections or stories about your time at the Big Red?
Oh, man. I mean, there was just so many good memories, and being on such a good team for 3 years made it so special. And just the group of guys that we had for the 3 years that I was there was unbelievable and so tight-knit. But I think the one memory that sticks out the most to me, I mean, it's more of like a funny story but yeah, was when we traveled to Miami of Ohio my freshman year. We had to actually walk from the hotel to the arena because our bus driver wasn't allowed to drive because he had to sleep.
Okay.
So we had to, because we were leaving right after the game, so. He wasn't allowed to drive the 10 minutes to the arena before the game. So we had to walk as a team through Miami of Ohio's campus at, I don't know, 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And November. So, and you know, we're wearing bright red track suits and, you know, we stick out like a sore thumb. So we got some, you know, some harsh words thrown our way walking through their campus on the way to the game, but
I would imagine
we ended up winning that game. So it made it that much sweeter when the game was over. But that was one of the craziest things from my college hockey career was walking to the arena on a Saturday afternoon from the hotel in the middle of, you know, their campus. So that was pretty crazy.
And I'm guessing it was bitter cold, right? You said November.
Yeah, it was a little chilly, but like just the amount of like their student life there at Miami of Ohio is insane. So their student body was letting us hear it on the way to the rink. So that was kind of like a welcome to college hockey moment, I guess.
I mean, honestly, the one thing I will say about the Big Red, they will literally warm up anywhere. Like when it comes to, because I was in Hamden the other day at Quinnipiac. And I was literally the only guy wearing a Big Red jersey in Hamden. And these guys are sitting there in their track suits doing their warm up right in the middle of the arena. And there's like all these like Quinnipiac fans are all yelling at them and stuff. And it's like, no, they're just doing their thing. I'm like, my goodness.
Yeah. Dedication, no. Man. Yeah. Whatever it takes, I guess. But That was definitely one of the most insane things from my college career that I remember the most.
Yeah.
All right. And now with that, thank you so much, Mr. Green, for joining us on the Sin Bin, making sure I got it right this time. But you listeners already know what's up next. It is the Slapshot round right after this. All right, welcome to the Slapshot round, where we ask hard-hitting, fun questions and have you answer them as quick as you can. So, per tradition, we always got to ask the first question around here. Are you good to go, Alex?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, I like this. Now, our team has been, you know, our Big Red Hockey Cast team, more specifically, has been having a little bit of a debacle here. Now, you are from the Midwest. We have to ask, because some of our team, again, they're debating this, is Ohio in the Midwest?
You know what? I think I want to give it to them. I think I got to give Ohio, you know, the title to being part of the Midwest.
Good answer.
I know they're on Eastern time, but
yeah,
I consider Michigan part of the Midwest. So if you give Michigan in the Midwest, I think you got to give Ohio the Midwest.
Yeah. I was going to say my mother's from Ohio and she's always saying like, oh, it's the one state that should be on Central time, but isn't because like the sun sets an hour later there and it's so weird.
Yeah. No, I'll give it to Ohio. I'll give it to them.
Thank you, because we've been having a civil war here. I have been saying Ohio is part of the Midwest. It's considered part of the Midwest in the U.S. Census Bureau. Everyone who disagrees with me, you can search up the government website and you could check that out. So, Alex, good job on joining the right side of this little war we got here.
Sure.
Now, of course, last week was St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, parties everywhere. It's you know, doesn't really... It's not a hidden secret. Now, you know, in Chicago, where they dye the river green, I'm assuming, obviously, you know, you are a greener. So is it any extra special of a celebration?
No, the last name doesn't make it any more of a celebration than it is for you guys. but no, it's a great holiday, obviously, for college students. And it's a lot of fun in Chicago as well. Yeah. So. Big fan of St. Patrick's Day, but yeah. Doesn't really stand out among the other holidays for me.
No, that's fair.
All right.
That's fair. And well, okay. I guess I got to ask this since you're from Chicago, and I probably know the answer to this, but Chicago style or New York style pizza?
Chicago deep dish all day.
Okay.
That's what
is there any specific toppings you're always getting on your favorite Chicago style pizza?
I'm a big fan of sausage. Just keep it simple with the deep dish sausage, but yeah.
Sweet and simple. I like that.
Yeah, no, there's a place right near my house called Pequod's Pizza. I think it's been on Barstool Pizza Review a couple of times, but that's my favorite pizza.
Wow. Oh, so wait. So would you prefer Lou Malinatis or Giordano's? Out of curiosity.
I don't like either.
You don't like either? Okay.
No, I'm a Pequod's through and through.
Okay.
Those Lou Malnati's and Giordano's are too touristy for me. So
okay.
Pequod's is the local spot.
All right. Oh, that's cool.
Well, I guess those are hot takes. Again, I have to go to Chicago sometime soon, man. I've always been told it's actually not too different from New York. Now, how do you testify to that?
I think Chicago's awesome. I think it has everything that New York has, just less chaotic, not as many fair. People, little cleaner too.
Yeah,
we don't put our garbage on the sidewalk like they do in New York. So
yeah, hey, you're trashing my hometown now.
Yeah, I'm just saying it how it is, but
I agree with this guy. You know, I live an hour from New York. I'm siding with Alex here. I'm sorry. But like
And then, no, Chicago. Wait, Chicago's awesome.
So, if you follow baseball, are you going with the Chicago White Sox or the Cubs?
I'm a Cubs fan.
And why? That's not charged. I'm not saying I'm a White Sox fan. I'm just curious because there's two franchises, and you know, as somebody who's not from Chicago, I don't understand it. What's the reasoning behind that?
No, so the Cubs are considered, or their nickname is the North Siders, and then the White Sox are considered the South Siders. So I grew up in the north of downtown Chicago. So, excuse me, my house is only two train stops south of Wrigley Field. So I've been a Cubs fan my whole life, and that's how I ended up a Cubs fan.
Wow. All right. And then I guess with the NBA, you're taking the Bulls any day?
Yeah, Bulls fan as well. Bulls and Bears.
Nice.
So
nice.
Hopefully the Bulls can make a run this year in the playoffs.
Oh, they're looking promising. They're looking kind of promising. Not going to lie.
Yeah. No, I'm optimistic. That's for sure.
With that being said, was also going – this is more hockey related, of course. Was Duncan Keith an idol of yours as well growing up?
Yeah, definitely. I mean – he was such a dominant player the years he played in Chicago. You know, three Stanley Cups, Norris Trophy, Conn Smythe Trophy. I loved watching him play. I think just the way he could slow the game down and the amount of poise he played with was incredible. And it was really fun to watch him play in a Blackhawks sweater.
Now, let me ask you this, because I remember reading But do you believe in your heart that Chicago fans, they are the most loyal to their team? Is there any other city in the United States where they're as loyal as the Chicago fan base?
I feel like I'm obligated to say that Chicago sports fans are the most loyal to their sports franchises. But I know Philly fans are super diehard about True. Their sports. So, you know, I think I'd have to give Philly a close second place silver medal. Yeah. But yeah, I gotta give it to the Chicago fans.
Oh, all right, that's fair.
So speaking of silver medals, you won gold in the World Junior A Challenge. So what was it like to beat Canada on their home soil on the international stage?
Yeah, it was super special. It was one of my favorite hockey experiences to date. You know, winning gold in Canada, was beating Canada in Canada, was something I'll always remember. And you know, Bonnyville, Alberta was where the tournament was held, so it was kind of in the middle of nowhere, so there was not much to do but focus on you know, winning gold. So it was a special moment for sure.
Got you. Also, by the way, I want to retract a little bit with the Chicago, New York thing. I want to ask you this. Have you watched Spider-Man 2? Just out of curiosity, have you watched it?
I have, yes.
All right. Now, how far away would you say is your neighborhood from, you know, that infamous train scene where Tobey Maguire, you know, is like scrunching up his face, holding the webs to his side like this? How far away was that scene from your place?
I mean, I don't know exactly how far away it was, but I'm actually from downtown Chicago. So, you know, a lot of people say they're from Chicago, but they're actually from a suburb. But no, my postage address is Chicago, Illinois. So probably not too far from where that scene was.
Okay. Now, as somebody who's actually from downtown Chicago, does that tick you off slightly when people say they're from Chicago, but they're actually from a suburb outside of Chicago? Because I know Absolutely. So many people who do that with so many different cities, and it's kind of annoying, like, in my opinion. But, like, hey.
No, it's the worst. I hate when people do it. I always ask – whenever I meet someone new and they say they're from Chicago, I make sure to ask them, like, if they're actually from downtown Chicago or if they're from, you know, a surrounding suburb. So I make sure to get the official address.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to ask this earlier. Now, I know – have you had the chance to meet Topher Scott at all?
Yeah, of course. I know Topher. Yeah,
he's not actually from Chicago, but like you see, he says he's from Chicago, so I'm just throwing that out there. But,
yeah, no, he's from the suburbs, so I mean, I understand why people do it. It's easier to just say you're from, you know, Chicago. Everyone knows where that is on the map geographically, but no, I make sure to find out where there people are really from that say they're from Chicago. Excuse me.
Yeah. I find that most people will say their city unless they are from New York for some reason. If they're from a suburb of New York, they will always say that suburb of New York. They will never say, oh, I'm from New York City, if they're not actually from New York City. Surprisingly.
Yeah, Staten Islanders tend to say New York City.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I can't blame them. As a Brooklyn, I can't blame them.
I guess just to follow it up, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. But what do you think is the most overrated movie of all time?
Oh, wow. Most overrated movie. That's tough, man. You guys should have sent me the questions before this. Give me some time to prepare.
No. It's okay. Take your time. And if you don't have one, that's perfectly fine.
Honestly, I'm not a huge fan of like the Avengers movies, so I'm gonna say the Avengers movies are overrated.
I'm glad someone else said it. I'm glad, Alex. You're not alone. You're not alone, man.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Iron Man or any of those kinds of movies, so I'll have to go with the Avengers for sure.
Ooh, that's a spicy take. That is a very spicy take. I was just gonna trash a little bit Endgame, but. Ooh, not even Iron Man 1?
I mean, well, first of all, sorry, Iron Man is a Marvel movie. I just had to check that. But, I guess he's part of the Avengers, right? I don't even know much about.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm just not a huge fan of superhero movies at all. I'm not a huge fan of the genre. So
that's okay.
Overrated.
Okay. No. No, that's cool. That's cool. And what is your favorite thing about, living and playing in Syracuse? Like what, because, I've been to Syracuse a couple of times, but like, what's your favorite part about the city?
Honestly, the support we get from the fans is pretty incredible in Syracuse. I know it's a big basketball school. Oh man, there goes my AirPod.
Tragic. Obviously it's a big March Madness.
Yeah, no, they had a tough season, but I think just the fan base in Syracuse is really strong, and every game is fun to play in front of those fans. So I'd say that for sure.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's a great, certainly a good city. And I'm honestly, I cannot wait until they finally get, I want to see Syracuse actually get a men's hockey team so they can join the ECAC with us. That'd be pretty cool to see because I know their women's team plays our women's team. So,
yeah, that would be cool for sure. Be a good good rivalry for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I guess we're obligated to ask this. If you had to pick a fast food restaurant, like if you had to choose between these two, are you living at Chick-fil-A or Tully's?
Chick-fil-A.
Okay.
Got to go with Chick-fil-A.
Great answer. I like that.
All right.
Yeah.
Never had Tully's. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I've even – I have to say, I don't think I've ever even heard of it.
No, it's a big thing in upstate New York, like Syracuse, Utica area of central New York. But no, people up here love it, but I got to stay loyal to Chick-fil-A.
Oh, man. I can only imagine the comments now. I'm going to be made fun of for never having eaten or heard of Tully's. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Now, just straying away from that a little bit, because this question apparently has been haunting the internet for like the past 2 weeks or so. Do you believe there are more doors or more wheels in the world?
I think I got to go with doors.
Yeah.
All right.
I know it might be a hot take, but I was talking about this with my roommate actually, and there's just like, you have so many doors inside your house that you don't even like remember. And then like apartment buildings, hotels, like they're everywhere. So I got to go with doors.
But what if I could counter with this? What if I could counter with this? Because just hear me out. Just hear me. I promise. So a door can't be a wheel, but a wheel can be a door.
What?
So, for example, you could have a rolling stone that acts as a wheel. That could be a door, like an entrance to a cave. So therefore, there are more wheels than doors.
I think you're overthinking it too much, though. I got to go with the doors. Because, like, yeah, you pass through so many damn doors in your life, you least count. And, like, I don't know. What was the context?
I think that comment was a little bit of a stretch, Sean.
Wait, but hold on. We're talking about Lego wheels. Let's not forget that. Wheels on chairs, you know, that sort of stuff.
Okay. Wheel chairs themselves. So now you're breaking it you're breaking it down by the type of wheel. Okay. Okay.
There are tons of wheels. Again, wheels can act as doors.
Uh-huh.
Wheels can act as doors, but doors can't act as wheels.
Mm-hmm. And, So we asked this for a lot of the big red guys, but I actually want to hear what this is at the professional level. Who is the best DJ on the Syracuse Crunch right now? Like, who gets the aux cord?
That would be Daniel Walcott. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but he played in the Rackers rival game this past summer in Ithaca. Nice. And his girlfriend is actually the assistant coach of the women's soccer team. So, Daniel, kind of a weird connection, but, she coaches the women's team at Cornell and he's one of the captains on the team in Syracuse. So he's the DJ.
That's pretty cool. And I've also been dying to ask this question. So in camp, have you gotten to share the ice with Steven Stamkos or Vasilevsky at all? I know you play with Barry Boulay and Max Lagace, obviously, but, you know, have you had the opportunity to shoot some pucks with Stammer or any of the boys down in Tampa?
Yeah, no, I mean, training camp is, a great experience. I was, on the ice with all those guys practicing, scrimmaging. So, there's a reason why those guys are two-time Stanley Cup champs looking for number three. But, yeah, they're world-class players. And it was I had to pinch myself a little bit when I was on the ice with them the first time 2 years ago for my first training camp in Tampa. But, yeah, it was super cool.
Pat Maroon looking for his fourth. I know.
And
then I'd wanted to ask your take on this because the Solar Bears signed Sean Avery to like a contract for all of about 3 days. So do you think they should have let him play? I mean, because they were talking about this on Spit and Chicklets. I know Biz Nasty and Witt had interesting takes on it, but what's your take on the whole Sean Avery debacle in Orlando?
I mean, there's a couple guys here in Syracuse that have, been back and forth between Syracuse and Orlando. So they actually got to meet Sean Avery and practice with him a couple times. So I have some insider info on what happened that, I don't know if I need to share, but.
Oh, okay. Okay. No.
Seemed like it was, mostly a PR stunt. So, they sold some jerseys and, got some attention on social media, but, yeah, I think that was the main goal of it.
Did it for the meme. That's what he did there. Yeah. No, but do you ever miss being in Florida? Because like you go from like it seems to me like the parent organizations are so far from each other. Like it's such weird climate differences. Like do you ever miss being in Florida? When you're up in Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely helps motivate you to get to the NHL. It's a lot nicer down in Tampa than it is in Syracuse. So, it's a little strange that, geographically they're so far away from each other, but, it is what it is. And honestly, it's kind of nice that, we're located so centrally on the East Coast because it makes our travel much easier. So, there's pros and cons for sure.
The fact that we have a pro hockey team so close to us, and it's not Buffalo.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to bash the Buffalo Sabres or anything, but like, just, hey, but no, yeah, I get that. And, so, I know we've asked a lot of people this, but are you a fan of the red or the white when you play for Cornell? Like, do you prefer wearing your home or away jersey?
I personally love the red jerseys. I think they're so sharp. The whole sea of red is something special. And, yeah, I just think the red jerseys are kind of iconic.
I know. Well, I don't know why we don't switch it up more. Like, because some teams will alternate. Sometimes they'll wear their darks at home. And I don't know why we don't do that more often. It'd be pretty cool because I love seeing the big red.
Yeah, no, I think they should adopt the rules that they have in pro hockey where at the midpoint of the season you switch from dark to light for home games. So I think that'd be pretty cool if, the Line of Faithful got to see the red a little bit more.
Yeah.
In Ithaca, at least.
Certainly. Certainly. I know it's always worth the trip. It's always worth the trip down to Boston to go to Line of East, but And that reminds me, I heard this on Pucks and Deep the other day. They had Casey Dornbach from Harvard on the pod earlier. I was wondering, you know, considering, you know, Line East and all that, what's your favorite barn to play at in the ECAC?
I mean, obviously Harvard is really special, but I feel like that's a super cliche answer that you guys get on your podcast all the time. But honestly, I loved playing at Union's rink. Every time we played there, it was always packed, and you know, the way that they have it set up, it's kind of just like two sides of bleachers that go all the way up on each side. So it gets pretty loud and rowdy in there. So I'd say Union, and then Princeton also has a great atmosphere. So I'd say those two for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say Princeton, cause I don't know, but like this past, because I went down to Princeton for the last away game of the season. And that was, I got to say, the energy from the Big Red fans in there, you'd think you were at a Cornell game at Princeton. It's this awesome looking arena, you know, packed house and everything. It's always cool to see.
Yeah, no, Princeton has a really special rink, Hobie Baker rink. So, you know, it's got a lot of history, but honestly, every game that we'd play on the road, we had so many fans that would travel to see us play. So every away game, you know, we had that almost like home court advantage with the fans that we had. So it was always special.
Yeah. That's kind of what I like so much about the Line of Faithful, is that you find them everywhere and they'll show up anywhere. And it's truly amazing to see.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead, Alex. Go ahead.
I just want to add one more. And I know, cause Sean and I asked this a lot, what's your favorite Line of Faithful chant?
Oh, it's gotta be the third period chant when we go out on the ice. Like,
yeah,
that's the crowd favorite.
The best one. It's the best one. So yeah. Third period for sure.
That seems to be the popular answer. It always gets the blood pumping. Now, going back to uniforms, because we have asked this before, and we have received actually differing opinions on this. Do you think the Cornell Big Red should adopt a third uniform?
Absolutely.
Now, what if absolutely. If you had to choose a uniform scheme or color, let's just say, for that uniform, what would it be?
I don't know. I've seen pictures like in the hallway of that like beige cream white color with like the red Cornell lettering. So I think that would be pretty sharp, kind of like that off white kind of color.
What if we did something like, you know, basically all black, almost an all black uniform. Would you be down for that?
I don't know. I'd have to see what like what would the logo, would it just be classic Cornell text, or would it have like the bear logo?
I think it would look cool if we had the bear logo. I don't know.
If it was done right, I think it would look really sharp for sure.
Either that, or we could just adopt like how the New Jersey Devils did, just Jersey across there. We could do like just, I don't know, Cornell or something like that.
Yeah. No, black would be interesting for sure. Something different, and yeah, it'd be cool.
Now, I have also gotten semi-ridiculed for it, but what if the third uniform kind of looked like a candy cane? So, like, I'm sure you're familiar with Dartmouth's third uniform where it's like green and white striped, right?
Yeah.
Now, what if Cornell did that? I think it would look nice. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Dartmouth's candy cane uniform. So, I don't know how it would look in red and white, but I don't know. I'm more of a fan of the simple jersey schemes.
That's fair. It looks like I'm at the odd end there.
I don't know. Dartmouth hurts the eyes, bro. I can't even imagine Cornell doing that. It's just like,
yeah. But imagine like when it's around, you know, December, the holiday season, the Christmas season, you know, and I don't know, maybe you could raise it for a charity or something. Like you could, what's the word, like bid off the jerseys, I guess. That's the closest thing I could see.
Yeah, auction off the jerseys. Yeah.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you, Alex. Yeah, you could auction them off and it will look nice. I think it looks snazzy. I'm just saying, red and white striped, everyone's hating on it, but it could work. Now, I think I want to ask this question because sometimes we have gotten classics. Do you have a funny or particular scenario story regarding Schaefer? Coach Schaefer.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stories about Schaefer. he's such an icon, and you know, he's got such a funny sense of humor. But I think the one story that sticks out the most was, I think it was after my freshman, like the game when McCray scored against Harvard. You know, he comes in the room to give his speech after the game. And, you know, usually we lift on Saturday night right after the game. Mm-hmm. So then we don't have to lift early on Monday morning. So I think, you know, we had such a good team that year. Like we'd won so many games, like he never canceled the team lift on Saturday. But, you know, Harvard game is such a big game, special occasion. You know, he came in the room and said, you know, lift is canceled, like get out of here, go enjoy yourselves, big win. So that was like kind of a shock to everyone. And, you know, it was nice of him to recognize, you know, how big of a game it was, and, you know, kind of give us the, you know, cancel the lift and let us go enjoy ourselves after that big win.
Wow. All right. Hey, that sounds kind of like a cool side of him. I don't know. I think that's, you know, usually we hear him being I'm trying to think of a way to phrase it, but like just an outright leader, like being an outright leader, sometimes putting, you know, it happens. You have to put the players back in their place, but he does it in, you know, funny ways. But this one, he sounds just like it sounds like he's human too. I know that sounds strange, but it just shows that, you know, he's human too.
No, he's, you know, he's not just a hockey coach. He prepares you for life beyond hockey. So, you know, he's a special individual, great person, great coach. And, you know, he knew how to manage our team. And, you know, when we had to work, he knew, you know, what we'd had to do. And then, you know, he was good at giving us time off and taking care of our bodies. So he's great at managing people and a hockey team.
I guess I could follow that up. What is the wisest piece of advice Schaefer has ever given to you?
I mean, when I was deciding to, you know, turn pro or go back for my senior year, he just kind of kept it straight with me. And, you know, he made me realize that I had to look myself in the mirror and, you know, decide if I was ready to go to, you know, the AHL and sign with Tampa or go back for my senior year. So just kind of that whole process was really eye-opening, and, you know, he made me look at things from a different perspective. So I don't think if there's one thing that stands out, like that he said in particular, but I think just that whole process was you know, eye-opening and really meant a lot to me.
That's truly amazing to hear, you know, because from a college hockey coach, of course they want you for one more year, but like to tell you to truly follow your heart is truly something.
Yeah, for sure.
By the way, speaking of preparing for life, I say that with a grin on my face. Cornell not only has premium hockey, but it has premium academics. With that being said, some of the academics can be stressful, to say the least. So with that being said, what was the hardest class you took at Cornell?
Honestly, like, I think that micro and macroeconomics freshman year was like one of the hardest two class. Like, it's supposed to be pretty easy, but I found it pretty difficult. So, and especially like as a young, naive freshman, you don't really know what's going on anyway. So I definitely struggled a little bit with those two classes, but we found a way to pass and make it work.
Alex, let me tell you, I basically had the same scenario my freshman year with microeconomics. That was,
I can also speak to the macro. Oh, that was brutal.
I mean, some guys on the team found it super easy, and I was one of the guys that did not. So, you know, it kind of added to the stress levels. But I was on the other end of the stick for sure.
I was also baffled by that. Not that I was on a team, but like I would see my classmates. They would have no trouble. But man, yeah. Microeconomics and, I mean, macro for that matter. One could say interesting stuff. Now,
For sure.
Is there a course at Cornell that you recommend that a student must take?
Well, my favorite class from Cornell was an ILR elective. So I don't know how easy it is for non-ILR majors to get into the class, but it was one of those 10-week classes with like 2.5 credits that met once a week.
Yeah.
And it was a professor that would fly in from DC every week to teach the class. So he wasn't a full-time professor, but the class was titled Environmental Arbitration and Negotiation. So super interesting. You know, the whole class was about how, you know, after natural disasters or like events like 9/11, like arbitrators have to come in and decide, you know, how much money gets allocated to the families that were the victims' families, how much money gets, you know, dedicated to building a memorial and so on and so forth. So it kind of just like taught you how much more goes into resolving problems like natural disasters or, you know, terrorist events than the media covers. So that was the most interesting class that I ever took at Cornell and, you know, really opened my eyes.
Speaking of opening eyes, both Alex and I had our eyes widened when you said this professor, you said he flies every week from DC to Ithaca and back.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he still teaches the class, but when I took it my junior year, he would fly in once a week to teach the class for 3 hours. And then he'd go back to DC to his normal job. So it's pretty cool.
I have to ask, is there a course fee attached to that that's paying for the man's airfare or something?
No.
That's crazy.
It was a normal class, 2.5 credits, I think. But it was super interesting, and I loved every second of it.
Was it a long class? Like, you know, you met once a week, so was it like a multi-hour class, or was it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was like a 2 to 3 hour night class that met once a week.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It was super interesting. And I don't know if they still offer it, but it was 10 out of 10. Highly recommend.
What was the professor's name, by the way? Sorry.
I'd have to go back and dig through the files, but I could probably find it for you guys before we end the call.
All right. Sounds good. Maybe we could do a little bit of a shout out there to that professor.
Yeah, now, that's crazy, man.
I do have friends in ILR, including one of the members here at BRSN who runs social media. With that being said, in fact, a lot of members of BRSN are in ILR. I've been told that it stands for I Love Reading. So can you testify to this? Do you love to read?
I wouldn't say I love to read, but I definitely became a better reader when I was when I was in ILR. But no, I mean, I wasn't a big math or science guy in high school. So, you know, when I was getting recruited, Coach Sire kind of led me to hotel or ILR. And I ended up choosing ILR just because of the, you know, the alumni network with Gary Bettman and, you know, Commissioner of Baseball, Robert Manfred. So that's kind of how I ended up in ILR.
All right. And would you say, I want to know how I could ask this and phrase this in such a way, but what makes ILR different from the rest of the Cornell schools, would you say? That's maybe a little loaded, but it is hard hitting. We did promise that.
Honestly, I think it's just like super tight knit. I mean, you could argue that hotel is like the most tight knit college on campus, but I don't know. I think, you know, because ILR is publicly funded by New York State. Mm. So I think, you know, it's pretty tight knit in that regard that there's a lot of people from, you know, a lot of people enrolled in the college that are from New York and from Long Island, New York City. So there's also a lot of athletes in ILR. So that made it easier for me to, you know, make friends and meet new people.
All right. Now, I'm afraid we do have to.
I want to ask one more question. Are there any people, because I know we've asked this quite a few times to a bunch of other people, and most of them have said, do you have any like ECAC rivals that like are actually your friends that you've played against? Because like I remember we talked with Derv specifically about his relationship with Gibby Smalls, who's the goalie for the Harvard Crimson. Did you ever have anyone that you were friends with that like you played against while you were at Cornell?
I didn't have too many friends on other teams in the ECAC. A lot of my like really close friends growing up went Big Ten. or NCHC. But it's funny now because Odin Tufto from Quinnipiac is in the Tampa Bay Lightning organization. So, you know, he was a bitter rival on the ice when he played for Quinnipiac, but now he's a teammate of mine in Syracuse. So nice. That's probably the closest thing I've got to answer your question.
No, all right. That's fair.
Bit of a small world moment there. You know, you have to remind him that, you know, Cornell swept Quinnipiac this year. So, you know, if you ever need some banter, just saying.
Yeah,
just
no, believe me, I always let him know about freshman year when we beat him 8-1 in the first game of the ECAC quarterfinals and swept them too. So I let him hear it for sure.
All right.
Brutal.
8-1 or 7-1, I can't remember, but
yeah,
we outscored them pretty badly.
Now, I suppose one of the two final questions we have to ask you, is the grass always greener?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. Right. There's always always an upside to everything for sure. So grass is always greener.
Well, you heard it from Mr. Green himself. You know, we had to ask that. We just had to. And I'm glad you chuckled at it. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
We try. And that's it.
I found the name of the professor, so I got to plug him. John Bickerman, ILRLR 3057, environmental mediation and negotiation. So highly recommend.
Wow. Well, you heard it here first. If they're still offering it, the Alex Green himself recommends it.
Yeah.
And
10 out of 10.
And with that, I think we just want to ask you if you have any final shout outs, any final comments in regard to your Big Red career overall.
I mean, I wish I could be saying good luck to the boys in the NCAA tournament this weekend, but unfortunately that's not the case. But they had a great season nonetheless, and it was fun to follow along and, you know, even catch a game against Yale back in the fall. So, you know, I miss those those 3 fifth-year students a lot from my class, my freshman class. But, yeah, shout-out to all the boys for sure.
Well, like you said, the grass is always greener. There's always an upside to it. So even though, you know, this wasn't the most desirable ending to the hockey season, we can only go up from here, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, hopefully a lot of guys on the team come back and, you know, play their senior year and, you know, help the team win an ECAC championship.
Exactly. So with that, we have to thank you, Alex, for really, you know, sparing your time with us. You know, we could only imagine, you know, being in the AHL, you must be extremely busy, and, you know, we appreciate every second that you spared with us today.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
No,
of course,
man. Best of luck with the rest of your season.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Well, to quote my Connecticut partner, Alex, always good to hear from Mr. Alex Green. And of course, we wish him the best in his season with Syracuse Crunch. In fact, I believe he will be facing another former Canalian.
The Cleveland Wednesday. Monsters.
Correct.
Yeah, Mully.
So,
Mully, I mean, baby.
I'm not sure if we're allowed to say, I mean, we technically did say best of luck, but, you know, it's kind of a two-way street. It goes for either party.
Yeah.
We just hope they play their best simply.
Yeah, exactly. We hope they both have good games. That was to quote Mike Azandi Hart from Big Red in Beijing. We just hope they have good games. You know,
exactly.
No, you don't necessarily pick a team, but you hope that they have good games.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, with that, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Big Red Hockey Cast for and from the Line of Faithful. This has been a Big Red Sports Network production. BRSN is a student-run organization dedicated to promoting the voices of Cornell student-athletes. Now make sure to check out at CornellBRSN on Instagram and www.cornellbrsn.com. And of course, shout out to our producers, Michael Farku, Mike Seitz, and Jay Klein. And we'd also like to thank Ben Rudoy, John Ashbrook, Gabby Nevin, and Sofia Prieto for basically being our Big Red Hockey Cast family. So with that, thanks for listening. Ciao, ciao for now.